House Committee on Human Services and Housing.
Somebody writes to me and says, what did you write in that? This week.
Thank you. So we have an informational hearing today, the school-to-prison pipeline. So we have some gentlemen who would like to speak to us today. Are you prepared to come up? Come on up and tell us who you are. And we understand that some of you are from community colleges and some of you are from high schools and middle schools. Is that correct?
Yes.
And if you could identify yourselves and maybe tell us who some of the other people are and where they go to school, that would be great. We're very happy to have you here.
All right. Hello. All right. My name is Jacob. I will be attending Portland Community College in spring, and I will major in communications. So you want to introduce everyone first?
No, that's okay.
Okay. So I wanted to bring up that black kids are students. They go to jail for, I believe, different points. One point could be maybe their background, maybe the way they were raised, their parents. Their father might have sold drugs, so maybe that's the only way they know. And I know most kids I grew up with back in my high school, I grew up in Texas, they were really drug orientated, but that was the way they grew up. So they really had no other choice, no one to really like lead them another direction. So that could be a real major issue, like the way they grew up, the background, you know. Some people can't get out of that situation. They don't have any other options, really. So jail is really, it could save them, save their lives in a way from getting killed in the streets, but it's not a good way also. But I just feel there should be something that helps those kids that need help, those kids that drop out of 10th grade, those kids that need that help.
So, Jacob, right?
Yes.
Jacob, so tell us why you are all here and why you want us to hear what you have to say.
We are all here to just give different points of view, give you an insight of the life. I wouldn't say the life of a black kid, but like I guess our point of view on what we're experiencing. And I just came to show that there's someone that actually, I haven't been through it myself, but I want to show that there are people out there that need help. There's some people that actually don't have very many choices, but they are trying to make a difference with their lives.
So how did this group of people get together? How was this group formed? And tell us your name first.
Okay. My name is Isaiah Fort Lucas. It's my cousin Jacob. This group got formed through Mr. Jackson and Mr. Lavelle Thomas, which is called Reaching and Empowering All People. They go to high schools and recruit us. I was recruited my junior year in high school. They just bring out something that's interesting to us or that makes us want to make a difference. And that's why we're all here, to make a difference and to show you and shed light on what is truly going on and what we need help with in society today in school.
So what did they say that made you interested in becoming a part of this group?
Just the fact that they could help me, or what did they say? They said a lot of things. They said that they could help me blossom into a better man and to help me, give me a voice. They showed me that youth today actually have a voice in the community, a bigger voice than a lot of other people and adults. And that just showed. They showed me that through videos, old videos of the Martin Luther King marching, kids marching, getting soaked with water and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, not soaked, but you know.
Yeah.
And so it just enticed me, and it showed me when I went to TriMet board and I spoke with the board members, and my voice and two other fellow classmates' voices enticed them to continue the bus pass thing that was going on, because they were trying to cancel our bus passes on our IDs.
Right.
So that showed me that we actually have a voice, and that's why I continue to do it today.
And how long have you been involved with this group?
I've been involved with REAP for about 3 or 4 years.
Really?
Yes.
Great. Representative Gulser just came in, and you are the one who sort of scheduled these folks to come here. So what was interesting to you, Representative?
Miss, we also have more stuff to say about...
I know. I'll get back to you.
Cool.
I'll get...
All right,
I promise.
Yeah.
Yeah, good for you. Speak up.
Professor Wilson.
So So what about this group of REACH made you think that this would be a good group to speak to, not just our committee, but yours also?
Sure. So I have had the opportunity to work with Mr. Jackson. Last session, we passed legislation that looked at the school-to-prison pipeline and our zero-tolerance discipline policies in public schools. And I think, the research shows that students of color are disproportionately impacted by exclusion. And following that, talking about where to go next, there's still a lot of work to do in that area. Mr. Jackson and I were talking about the importance of having young people who are impacted by these policies or who can speak about people that they know that are impacted by these policies was important to moving the conversation forward and raising awareness. So we started talking about how can we get young men, young leaders in front of the legislature and becoming engaged in the process and helping us to learn more from people rather than necessarily just articles that we read.
Great. Thank you, Representative. So, you had more to say.
He's next.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Trayvon Nakano. I wanted to bring up the subject about why African-American boys are going to prison. Just wanted to say, they might not have a father figure in their life, so, they depend on their mom. But, I understand that, but, a mom can't, always teach you, the same things that your father can. And, when they go home, they, feel alone sometimes, because, their mom is there, but, they want, another person there, the second hand. And so they might bring on themselves to, sell drugs, steal, just run away. I felt like that. At a certain point, freshman year, my dad went to jail for selling drugs and having arms on him. And so I felt like that it was my fault because my mom and dad got into a divorce. And so I thought it was my fault and my little brother's. And so I was like, man, I don't even want to do this anymore. So I just ran away for maybe 2-3 weeks because I couldn't do that anymore. I didn't really feel like doing that. And so when he got back, he would try to build a relationship with me, but I was and so some solutions to that are get a mentor before any of that happens, before nip it in the bud before anything happens, they go to jail or something. And that's all I gotta say.
Questions of any of these three?
Yes, more testimony.
Has more testimony.
I'm sorry.
As I said before, I don't know if I said before, my name is Isaiah Fort Lucas. I'm a REAP ambassador for 4 years or 3 years. I can't remember. I graduated from Lincoln High School in 2012. I work at Lloyd Center, and I currently go to Mount Hood Community College. First personal testimony, I guess, would be I've been pulled over 5 times in my car, and majority of the reason is because they make an excuse, your taillight is broken out, and I'm like, all right, and so they drive off, and I go out and look, and nothing's wrong. I think majority of the reason why teens and other black men as myself that are above the age of teenage ages have problems because we're just not fully understood. I'll use an example. I was going to work a couple weeks ago, and I usually dress up for work how I am right now because, I feel, if you dress the part, you'll get the part. So I want to move forward in life. I was passing some other workers at different stores and everything, and I was like, hey, and I go, hi, how you doing? What's going on? And I'm like, all right, yeah, have a good day. A couple of days later, I'll come back dressed in, my street clothes. I'm 20 years old, so I still dress, like a teen. And I said hello to the same people, and they looked at me like, oh, hi, and nervous. And when I was back in high school, I'll walk across the street or walk past another individual who was a different race, and I would see women clutching their purses or not making eye contact with me. So, I think to an extent, outside of me being dressed like this, people actually think that youth people or just adult men are just thugs because of what they see on TV. They don't get the chance to actually personally know the person individually on a level basis. Also, I think the reason why Did you guys know that in jail cells, in the nation jail cells, majority of the men in jail is 60% black in public jail cells, I believe. I read that somewhere earlier today. I think it's because, one, they get paid $26,000 or more for each man in jail, and majority of the people in jail are youth, are 18-year-old men, because they don't have anything to go, they don't have anywhere to go, anything to do after school, anywhere. They don't want to go home because it's bad stuff going home, so what are they going to do? They're going to run the streets. So I think that's the reason why a lot of us are being caught up. Also, just different cultures. I mean, because my mother, as I said before, in the lunchroom, when I was in lunch with Miss Representative Gessler, my mother and my grandmother are teachers at an elementary school. And what I noticed is a lot of the students are befriended by the teachers instead of a friend level, and majority of teachers there are white. My mother and my grandmother don't do that. They're keep professional. The kids get online, they let them know, you know, you're being online, you don't talk to me like that, I'm your teacher. So I feel, you know, just different cultures. The adult should be an adult. One more thing, like I said, I know I'm taking a long time. Yeah, I guess that's it. Overall, it's kind of sad, really sad. And I've had a couple experiences with it, but as you can see, not many. I've seen people, my other cousins at high schools, being told, you know, you're not really supposed to graduate. You're not going to graduate because his mother was a crackhead. And, you know, but he overrode that, and he graduated same year as me. So, yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you all for coming. Thank you. Any questions from any of the committee? Representative Gallegos.
Yeah, I'm curious, what do you think, I mean, what kind of program are you involved in, I guess? I mean, you know, like, what kind of things do you get to do with the group, that kind of thing?
So far with the group, we were supposed to have a potluck. It was my idea, but it didn't come to fruition because I guess people were just busy with summertime. But I wanted to have a potluck because we have different type of people in our group, not just African-American. We also have Russian, just different ethnic groups. And I want everybody to bring their food together, you know, just because, I mean, we know kids from different schools. Like, I don't really know a lot of these Madison kids. I know a couple of them, but not really. You know, just to get to know them. Barbecues. That's just not much. But majority of things we do is just business. Like, we get to meet CEOs, go to events. One of the events I went to, I sat with the CEO of the Big Brother company. Or I think I have his card in my wallet somewhere. I can't remember his name. But I've spoken with a lot of CEOs, and we get to just be in that environment. And I was like, wow, I want this environment. I want to be able to sit down and eat these type of meals with people. I don't want to, you know, go home and worry about eating beans and rice or, you know, stuff like that.
Follow up?
Yeah, I just, actually, when my intern back here just gave me some data just about half hour ago about the numbers of students who don't go on to college after high school. And I just, they just blew me away, those numbers. So, I mean, is going on to college and continuing your education, is that part of what you guys talk about?
Yes, most definitely.
Good,
they urge that a lot.
Good, yeah.
My heart's beating pretty fast, so it's hard for me to think, too.
And,
go ahead.
I graduated from Texas, so when I graduated, I played a little bit of baseball, but the opportunities I had for scholarships, they weren't what I was looking for. So, I mean, towards the end of my senior year, I didn't really have many scholarships. Like, I didn't fully know how to do them. Like, no one was there to help me. So I feel like once those kids that do finish high school, they don't know what to do after they graduate. Like, everyone says, yeah, I'm going to go to college. Yeah, I'm going to go to college. But I mean, those kids, they don't know how to get there. Like, if they do, then they'll end up on the old student loans or whatever. Then they're in another situation once they finish school, if they finish school. And even if they don't, they're still on money. But it's good to know that there's programs that do help kids with scholarships, because I mean, I really needed help, and I'm glad I got the opportunity to move out here and get another chance. So, yeah.
Also, a lot of the schools I know that have received cutbacks in what Lincoln is called flex time, where you go after school and meet your teachers and catch up on work or talk to them about things you don't understand. A lot of schools have had that cutback from them, which is needed very much so. And like he was saying, it's very beneficial. And because of that, they're on the streets, you know, being teens and getting caught up in things they don't need to be in.
Representative Whitson.
Thank you. Everybody sort of think about this question. Do you feel hopeless? Like when you wake up in the morning, how do you feel? I mean, just, I haven't been a kid for a long time. And I was just wondering, do you feel that this society is oppressive to you, or that you don't have anything to go to look forward to, or do you wake up and go, well, I have a whole life ahead of me, and I want to do this and this and this? I mean, how do you feel? I mean, you're kind of giving us an idea, but just I sort of sense the feeling that maybe you feel like there's not a lot for you out there. I was just wondering, how do we fix that? How do you guys think that we fix that as a society?
When I wake up, I normally don't feel that way. I mean, some days I do. It's like, normally when I wake up, I just like, man, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, but like when my mom comes in, she's like, just do it, get it over with. You got so much looking ahead of you in the future. Get your schoolwork done, go to college, then you can do whatever you want from there. Like, have kids, get married. And so when I think about that, I'm happy. I'm like, good things going on. So my schoolwork's going good after she says that. And then some days, like probably a month, two after that, I'm like, again, I don't want to do this. Like, what's there for me out there? But then, like, she gives the same old speech. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this, get this done quickly, real quick. I'm cool. Then I'm happy again. But, like, what I need help with is, like, some more motivation out there, like, more than just, like, a speech.
Mm-hmm.
I need, like, maybe somebody to help me with that. Like, I have a mentor right now with the Big Brother, Big Sister program, and, like, he helps me a lot. My grades are actually doing good right now. Like, then from, like, a year ago, I was completely failing. So after I got him, he helped me out. Like, we're actually about to go get my permit in, like, a week. So he helped me with that, like, read the book, study with me. And I'm trying to get a job, like, somewhere, like, maybe Burger King, something like that. Something simple for a start. And so, yeah, that's all I got to say.
Okay. Honestly, my freshman year of college, I did feel that way. I did feel some hopeless. I was like, yo, what's the point of all this? Because, I mean, if you really look at it, I work at Bath & Body Works, and I have people who have graduated, who went to graduate school and everything and got degrees,
mm-hmm.
but are still working part-time at Bath & Body Works and can't find a legitimate job, or who have gone back to school for different things, or going to Le Cordon Bleu or something like that, anyways. But, yes, I do feel like that at times, but like him, I'm also reminded by what I see and what I've seen with my grandmother and everything else, that it can be overcome and great things can happen. But you just have to get through the tedious things right now, and you'll be eating 5-course meal someday.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks for being here, guys. I've been listening to you. I listened to some of your colleagues talking to us in the last hour, and I heard you describing some of these issues and concerns and problems. First of all, let me say about hopelessness, I think everybody feels that way sometimes.
Yeah.
And the question is how often you feel that way and whether you can recognize the opportunity to turn things around. But don't think you're alone. Everybody feels hopeless sometimes. I've got a really hard question for you. And you give me part of your answer now, but think about it. Maybe contact me later with an answer by email or send me a letter. And this goes for everybody in the room. You've helped us understand part of a problem. if we were to change places and you were sitting up here, what would you do to try and solve some of the problems you've told us about today?
If we were to trade places, what I would do, I probably wouldn't be in the chair. I would probably be out in the community trying to help, trying to understand what kids are going through, going to kids and asking them, yo, why aren't you in school right now? What are you doing over here? I know it's probably hard for you to do. You probably have a lot of paperwork and such to do as well. But, you know, just try to get more out into the community, because I feel like you can't really understand something until you have experience in it. You can't place judgment on anything until you've been through that or have done that.
Okay.
That's well, a piece of my answer, yeah.
But I'm going to presume for a minute that you've been out there, you understand those things. If I can just continue. So with what you understand about the problem, what would you do next? You can think about it and get back to me later. Seriously, I'd like to hear from a lot of people in the room what you think you'd do next.
And let's give them information so they can report back to us. And I think all of us would like to hear that response.
You
it's
all
a
have
great question.
Business cards.
You bet.
Yes, we'll get.
We'd like to receive some. Of those.
Yes.
I guess I would try to do what you guys are doing, trying to push bills across. Fundraise.
And where would you like the money to go if we were to fundraise?
Well, to REAP one. I think we're more just more nonprofit associations that are trying to help teens
individually.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
So, I'm hearing mentoring, one-on-one mentoring.
Yes.
Or encouragement from someone, whether it's your parent or parents or someone. Do you think race makes any difference in who mentors you? Because there tends to be a lot more white people.
Yes.
That would be available to do that, but if it doesn't help, or does it help, or do you care?
I mean, some might not care, some might, because, I mean, in all honesty, you can't really teach, you can't have a white man teach a black, how to raise, you can't teach a black man how to be a black man in this type of community, because, I mean, you can't teach him how to act in public, how to control your anger, because, I mean, there's so many things that, you know, that another man can't teach another man, but it's some things that you can't as well. So I think it does depend on the mentor and the kid.
Any other questions? Representative Gilliam.
Madam Chair, I was about 2 minutes late. Is everyone, our guests are all from REAP?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that REAP?
Correct.
And just to make sure, are we having other testimony? Or?
There's one more person who's expressed an interest. Chris?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Okay. I missed what E in REAP. My fault.
Empowering.
Yes.
Okay, good. Just to comment to say thank you for coming. You all three presented quite well. You answered questions better than many legislators that we have in front of us at times. And I really appreciate your presentation. I don't mean to be critical of Representative Kelser and my chair, but if I had my druthers, rather than having a hearing, I'd rather be invited to the potluck or the barbecue.
I hear you on that.
I'll bet that can be arranged.
Get to know you there as well.
So yes. Thank you for listening to us, by the way.
You bet.
Yes.
Thank you for coming today.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
I'll give them
yes.
one question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Growing up, and some of the testimony we've heard, my father was my role model. I had also other role models that, you know, I read a lot of biographies and stuff. Do each of you have a role model that's helping you in your future and someone you're trying to model your life after?
My biological father, he stays in Oregon. I left Oregon when I was about 2. So when I went to Texas, my little brother's grandfather, he's always orientated with the church. He runs Little League baseball. Factory. He retired from ExxonMobil. So he, you know, seeing someone that's black and old and successful, you know, that really brings light to someone that grows up in a not so good neighborhood. So he's my motivation, and
I try to talk to him as much as I can, and he gives me a lot of advice. So, my grandfather.
Good.
Yeah.
I liked your grandfather too. I used to live in Texas as well. I think my role models, I have cut like three I can think of. This might sound cliche, but it probably had to be Mr. Jackson and Mr. Lavelle Thomas. They're the CEOs of REAP. Not because, you know, they do what they do, but because when I speak to them, all I hear is positiveness and joy and calmness and peace. And that's all I really care about. I don't really care about money. If I get that, if I attain that, then I attain that. I'm all well with that. But overall, all in life I really want is just peace, joy, and happiness and love. So, I mean, I know money rules the world. It makes the world go around. So if I get that a little bit, I'm not tripping. But probably my dead godfather, Mr. Horace, he used to be my barber. I used to work for him in a barbershop, and he gave me a lot of good advice, and he was always just happy, even when things were bad. And goodness doesn't come without pain. So, yes.
Very good.
I have to say my mom, she was there all the time, like after school, need help with my homework. She gave me like really good advice on like if I like, need something, I could always go to her, and she held it down for like most like 13 years until my dad came back around. And yeah, so I'd say my mom.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you for that. Those are all good role models. You mentioned Dr. King, and I'd also encourage you to, I'm retired military, and I had the pleasure of working for a General Chappie James, who was the first black four-star general in the military. He was a very popular, dynamic man, and also worked for General Powell. And those are people in books I'd encourage you to read about for other role models. Thank you.
What was his name again?
General Powell.
Colin Powell.
Colin Powell.
Oh, okay.
Secretary, he was a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Secretary of State and advisor to President Bush. Should have been a good candidate for president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Marcus Garvey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you for having us.
And Chris Oldham. Thank you. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for bringing this wonderful young man to us today.
Hi. So, my name is Chris Oldham. I'm 23 years old. I'm probably one of the oldest students as part of REAP. I've been a member of REAP since, I say, for about 5 or 6 years now. I graduated from Reynolds High School. I attended Mount Hood Community College at PCC. And I'm going to speak with you about black youth in jail. I want to start off by speaking about corrupt enforcers, law enforcers. I came to Oregon when I was 13 years old with my mother and my little brother from Mobile, Alabama, and I was in the 8th grade at that time. I was pulled over at least 5 times just walking from school to home by police officers because of what I was wearing. I probably had 1 or 2 guys with me. We were considered a gang, and that's what the officers told us. If you're 2 or more people walking in the group, you are considered a gang. Mm-hmm. So we were pulled over a few times. We were checked. Our pockets were emptied. And it happened multiple times. I didn't know if that was a normal thing in Oregon, but, you know, it affected me. I've been arrested a few times. One time was my fault. I'll get into that later. And the other time, I was coming home from, I believe it was work, and I had my work backpack, my school backpack on, and I was, because I go from work to school. And it was a pretty big backpack. And I saw 2 law enforcers talk to some, they came onto TriMet property to speak with some teenagers that were using like the phone jack at the TriMet bus stop or something. And I was listening to my music, and I walked in the other direction. The officer, I guess, assumed I looked suspicious, so he questioned me. I showed him my my bus pass, and he asked me some questions about why I was, you know, in a bad mood and small talk. And I told him I felt that it was unnecessary for him to speak with me because he was a police officer, not TriMet police. And he got offended, and he got a little aggressive. And at that point, he threw me on the ground, arrested me, and like 5 other officers had their guns out, and they're, you know, they're I don't know what you call those sticks, but the, you know, the billy clubs, and they arrested me, and they didn't find anything on me. I didn't have any drugs, any weapons, but that was probably one of my worst experiences with police officers. I had to walk home that night because it was the last max, so that just made things worse. So I strongly believe that corrupt officers have a big impact on why there are so many black youth in jail. Secondly, I would like to agree with you. Yes, I did feel hopeless for a long period of my high school time up in Oregon. I didn't feel like I had support in school or support at home. The fact that me dressing in all red at high school makes me look like a gang member. But if a white kid dresses in all red, he just likes the color red. And this happened a lot of times. I've been sent home because I look like a gang member. I cannot wear too much brown. I can't wear too much red. I can't wear too much blue. I've been sent home a lot of times. I've been suspended a lot of times for that fact. I just like matching, that's all. But that's besides the point. I'm not a gang member or anything, but made me feel hopeless for them to assume that I'm something that I'm not. And I'm not intimidating in any way, in my opinion, but I was I did feel a sense of hopelessness from that. Another contribute to black youth in jail is broken families. Me and my little brother, we are a family of three, me, him, and my mother. We both don't have our fathers in this state. They're both in a different state right now. I think the fact that we don't have fathers affects how we interact with each other, with women, with everyone in our community, because we don't have that other half. So the fact that our house is broken means that we're broken. The fact that we don't have two sources of income means that some days we go without food, some days we could go without clean underwear, something like that. It's not that extreme, but you get my point. The fact that our family is broken to the point where there was lack of communication, lack of compassion, lack of discipline, it affected how I interacted with my peers and my mother and my little brother. I was angry because I didn't have that other piece. Another factor is the lack of unity that I felt. I didn't feel like I had enough positive role models in my life. I didn't feel like the people who looked like me wanted to do the same things I wanted to. And in order to be part of their unity, I would have to do the things they wanted to do. I did have an older brother who lived in Oregon. He's no longer living here. But he wasn't the best role model, but he was my big brother. He was closer to my father figure than anyone else. But he wasn't a good role model, like I said. So I figured if I wanted to be united with him on a different level, I would have to do what he's doing because he is my role model. So pretty much bad leadership leads to youth men in jail as well. The fact that I had low self-esteem due to the fact I didn't have two parents contributed to me not succeeding as much as or as fast as I should have in high school and in middle school. And there was many points in my life where I felt afraid of trying to be successful. I felt afraid to talk in public like I'm doing now. I was afraid to, you know, write in my writing classes how I really felt about the environment that I was in, because I was very uncomfortable. It was very uncomfortable being the only black student in a classroom where we're talking about slavery, or we're reading To Kill a Mockingbird or Huckleberry Finn, anything related to black people, because everyone wants to know how you feel about that. How are you going to react? Are you going to be angry? Are you going to cry? Are you going to, you know, just be nonchalant and not care? And most of the time I was nonchalant. I didn't want them to know that I was affected by that because I'm the only one there. I want to keep my composure. So I didn't speak out on things like that. I was afraid of what other people may think because I didn't have enough support in my community to feel comfortable doing that. I feel like a lot of black youth, don't feel like they can make it in positions that you all have due to the fact of their skin color, whether that's true or not. So they go an easier route to make income, which is selling drugs. And there was a point in my life where I did a lot of that. So weed for a very long time. I've done ecstasy. I've done this. Well, same thing. I've done this. I've done shrooms. I've done weed. And that didn't last for very long. It was more of a phase, just me trying to fill in the holes in my life. But I did sell weed for a point in time. And I didn't really consider the fact that the reason why, a big reason why I didn't have my father was in my life is because he went to jail for selling drugs. And I never really thought about that. I just wanted to make money and didn't really want to risk applying for a job and getting shut down. I was afraid to succeed. So that was one of the things that would have contributed to me going to jail. And I got arrested for that once when I was 15. I think that another reason youth feel like they have to be in a gang, like I said, to feel united, to have some kind of brotherhood, because I could sit and talk with you guys, but you guys would never understand exactly how I feel. And though you may have, you know, my best interests at heart, you would never have my heart. You would never go through or feel what I feel. So it's easier to discuss with these guys because they share the experience. And REAP isn't about excluding anyone. It's just this particular segment, the Black Male Challenge Group, is about unifying black males so we can be better leaders in the community and reach out to other people. We want to fix our own problems before we reach out and assume that you guys are going to understand exactly how to fix our problems. Also society pressures. Insecurity is another reason why people, youth, go to jail. They, you know, feel insecure and turn to things like drugs or stealing or aggressiveness or anger to kind of cope with their lack of secureness. I, for a long time, had an inferiority complex. I felt, you know, inferior to my classmates, which were white. I felt stupid for having to ask them questions. And I don't know if it was them making me feel that way or if it was just internal that, you know, all in my head that I felt inferior, but for a very long time I felt inferior. As a student at high school, as a black student at high school, at least out in the Gresham area where I'm where I live at, you feel alone a lot. You don't feel like there's any sense of community. The black kids hate the black kids. The white kids hate the black kids. In my opinion, when I was a high school student, Latinos, Hispanics looked down upon us. Native Americans looked down upon us. And it's sad because the stereotypes that they see on TV, they see in school, so they really believe all of us are like that. If they see us sagging our pants, if they hear us calling each other the N-word, if they see us absent from class every day, all of these things, being tardy, all of these stereotypes that they see on TV, and black kids see on TV, we believe black people are really like that. So we enact that, and then the cycle just continues. People think we're like that. We become what they think of us, and we don't know how to express our confusion or discomfort other than being angry or aggressive or just not caring about life whatsoever. So, that's why I think black youth are filling up the jail cells. And I don't want to talk forever, but on the solution part, I feel like if teachers and leaders in the community were more motivating and less critical, less judgmental about things they don't understand, if we had more assistance, not necessarily financial assistance, but more resources like tutors, after school programs, if teachers or counselors could call more frequently to the parents or follow up with grades, you know, that could help our grades improve a lot. If we know that you care, we will care more. I think better communication with the family, say, not just an email or a phone call, leaving a message. You actually have to hear a person answer the phone and know that they're going to do something about the problem that's at hand. I think if we prioritize and prioritize identifying sources of problem, whether it be lack of clothing, lack of food, you know, whatever the problems are at home, if you solve those or try to help solve those, it will make what's going on at, in school a lot more pleasant, you know, the experience. And, so for the most part, that's what I feel is causing so many black youth to drop out and then wind up in jail. Any questions?
You're very articulate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Very articulate.
You shared a lot with us, and I appreciate it. Any questions?
Representative Gallegos.
Sure. Thank you very much for your presentation. As they say, you're very articulate. I think that one thing I want to assure you of, and all of you guys, you know, up here people say, well, you know, we've all been hopeless and that kind of thing. But, you know, the truth is that white people have privilege, and they have to appreciate that they have a privilege that people with different colored skin do not have. And that, you know, we're none of us chooses, you know, the family we're going to be born into, the color of our skin. We just, you know, we come into this world. And I just think, you know, we're given a life to live, and how we live it is really what's important, right? And, you know, I think the business about, particularly with black males, I think, you know, we've really got to work to make sure that black males succeed in this life. I mean, it's tragic, as you said, you know, overrepresentation in our prisons and drug addiction, all kinds of things that are just really hold us back. And so, you know, I think you guys are all on the way to being the kind of men that I think other people can look up to. I mean, there's nothing keeping you guys from being up here and eventually one day making the laws, you know, really impacting addiction and prison issues and all that kind of stuff. So I just want to say I really respect all of you and appreciate your coming, and I hope to see you up here in 20 years or so.
Thank I gave you. Them 5 to 10 years.
Now, you're probably not going to think that you have a lot in common with the women who are sitting here, but a lot of us have understood to some degree, not the skin color, but the discrimination, if you will, to get to this point and in our careers. I became a geologist, a petroleum geologist, and so I went to school with all men. And I went to work out in the oil fields with all men, and I was the first woman many times that the men on these giant oil wells had ever seen out in the field on these wells, and they didn't like it very much that I was going to be their boss. And so, you know, I worked, but my whole life I've spent as a minority among men in a professional way, and we still are in this building. And I make no judgment on my colleagues because they've been good to me. But sometimes, you know, you look at people and you think, I don't have anything in common with them, but I'll bet you that I can relate, and the women up here, and probably some of the men too, can relate to being the only one in a different way, sex-related, you know, gender-related, and having to overcome to get to where we are. And, you know, there are a lot of times I heard, you're never going to be a geologist. Mm-hmm. I seriously, from my family, because it's a male-dominated field. And, I mean, it was like, well, and then you're going to graduate school? You're never going to finish that. You can't do that. That's too hard for you, you know. And I just kept trying and trying, and I think we all have experiences like that, and I would just encourage you, if you have dreams, just pursue them and keep on going. And you get knocked down a few times, and you know, you get people who don't want you to be there, and you just pick yourself up and keep going, because you can do whatever you want to do if you believe in yourself. So, thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Nicely put. Thank you. Yes.
Madam Chair, thank you, committee members. Mark Jackson, REAP Incorporated. I think the strategy today was not to bring data, but bring stories, and to make sense of this school-to-prison pipeline. What you've heard today are a lot of social factors that come into the classroom, and the lack of supports and training of educators to respond to the issues you heard this afternoon. And that's the issue, is that we have all of these type of traumas that have taken place in the lives of young people, and they bring that to the safe haven called school. And because there are not the appropriate resources and training to support our teachers, what we find is we find reactionary, subjective interpretation of what's going on in kids' life. Consequently, kids are suspended, they are expelled from school, hence they fall their pipeline into prison, and there's not really a real corrective measure going on. And I think what REAP is trying to do is, in our work, you heard from Brian, who he came part of the program as a junior. At that time, I think a 1.7 or 1.6.
Lower than that. My GPA was a lot lower.
And when he got through, it was what?
A 3.5.
Mm-hmm. You know, so all because of a vision around affirmation. And not seeing the deficits, but seeing the assets of young people and building upon that potential. REAP provides school-based programs in the schools, weekly basis. We provide summer programming with one purpose in mind, is to instill a belief that you have potential, you have personal capital, and you can change the world one person at a time. What you're seeing today is the next wave of leaders. Give them a platform to have voice. And I think in terms of how do we make things better, we have to put pressure and the light more on policies that oppress, alienate, and push out our young people who are trying to come to a place for help to escape their social ills. And what we're finding is those who are in the position to help don't have the skill sets to help. So we put more money into a system, right, that's more so interventive and not money into a system that's proactive and preventative. What REAP is trying to continue to do is provide a preventative model that will keep our young children out of the school, out of the prison system, and into the classroom, getting all necessary skill sets to earn a livable wage. And I think we talk about being impactful with policy. I think the bill, House Bill 2192, speaks to that, to deal with those harsh policy issues that remove our kids from school. And it also will curb this disparate data we're seeing, where you see minority students who are being suspended in Multnomah County 3 times that of the counterpart, and for black males about 6 to 1. These are issues we can correct if we correct policy and hold our educators and our law enforcers accountable, that we're not talking about, issues or something. We're talking about human capital. We're talking about individuals' lives, human resources who add value to our region. So I want to thank Representative Gelser for giving our students a platform throughout this entire day to deem this day a day of black male leadership in lieu of Black History Month. Not so much History Month, but it's about preparing the next generation of leaders to see life beyond a certain context and see what's possible. And REAP is about bringing the future right into the now. Thank you for your time today. Appreciate
Thank you
it.
So much. And I hope you will send us some information, because unfortunately we weren't prepared to hear what it is that you have to say, because we didn't know about REAP, at least most of us didn't. It'd be really informative for the group to have that information. And I would hope, I'm on the Judiciary Committee also, and obviously it didn't meet today, but I would hope that we could have this presentation and this information also at the Judiciary Committee, maybe either next week or perhaps at another time, but we'll try to do that.
Certainly.
Thank you so much, and thank you all for coming.
Thank
Your
you
stories
very much.
Are very compelling and interesting and informative for us who have a different colored skin. It's important for us to understand where you're coming from and what the issues are that you're dealing with. So thank you again. Any other last minute? remarks or questions?
I've got one, if you don't mind.
No, please.
There's something very rare in this building right now, and I don't mean to embarrass anyone, but I think that the representative probably noticed it. I went to Warner Pacific College, and I never get to see a Warner Pacific College. Welcome.
It's my district.
That's great. Thank you again so much.
And thank you very much.
We will close the House Committee on Human Services and Housing.
Thank you.
Services and Housing.